Listen to the voices of our world.
Congress took tribal Indian land.
They wanted to eliminate a race.
The government owes $176 billion to roughly 500,000 Indians.
They didn't bank on the fact that people would fight and stand up for their rights.
Welcome to Voices of Our World, a presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. I'm in a bit of a bind, and I think you can help me out. About 2 years ago, I let a friend stay in my apartment while I was traveling. The deal was, she would pay my rent and utilities, and if she had to move elsewhere before I came back, then she'd have to get a subletter for me. And that's when trouble began. The new subletter agreed to move out before I returned, but when I got home after a long plane ride, my locks didn't work. I called the subletter, but she didn't answer, and she didn't answer for days. I called a locksmith, who said that the whole door needed to be taken off its hinges, and that I should call the fire department. And when they showed up, the cops did too. IDs were checked, and the cops said that I had no right to enter my own apartment without the permission of the subletter. Days went by, and finally, I managed to run into the subletter in the hall. She invited me in, said she wasn't leaving and my furniture was gone. The cop said my only recourse was to start eviction proceedings against her. So let's get this straight. A stranger gets to live in my home, run her business from it, and prosper. She also stopped paying rent, and I am staying on a friend's couch, struggling to pay all the bills. Court and government bureaucracy is slow as molasses. It's been almost a year, and I haven't been able to live in my own home. So today's show is not about housing law. It's about justice not served. Native Americans got the short end of the stick. In the late 1800s, their land was taken and divided into little pieces. Then the United States government said that they'll help them make money by leasing the land. And that's when it all went wrong. The government leased the land to oil companies and agribusiness and others, but it rarely paid the Indians their due. So everyone got rich on Indian land but the Indians. One woman decided to set the record straight. Her name is Eloise Pepian Cobell of the Blackfeet Nation. She sued the U.S. government for $176 billion, and the current administration is fighting it like mad. Today we'll speak with Eloise Cobell and Julia Witte, a contributing writer for Mother Jones. Julia Witte begins.
Basically, this is a lawsuit that Eloise Cobell has brought on behalf of 500,000 Indians in America, and it's a class action lawsuit against the United States government. It's based on a historical event in 1887, which when Congress passed what's known as the Dawes Act. And basically, with the Dawes Act, Congress took what had been tribal Indian lands, and it broke those lands up into individual lands. And there were two reasons behind Congress's drive to do this. One was the fear that the tribes were still too powerful and that Indians would never, quote-unquote, assimilate unless the power of the tribes was broken. But the second and really most important reason behind the Dawes Act was Americans were pushing westward. They wanted western lands where Indians had been pushed into and relegated to, and now they wanted them. So in effect, what the Dawes Act did was it took tribal lands, it parceled them up into small allotments and gave individual Indians allotments. And in the process, it sort of managed to strip off about 50% of those lands and award them to settlers.
This is Eloise Cobell.
The Dawes Act not only affected the Blackfeet Nation, it affected pretty much all of the Indian nations west of the Mississippi. So we have North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, Oregon, Washington, and into New Mexico and Arizona. And I feel that it was a way that non-Indian settlers could get more and more control over Indian lands.
Now, the U.S. government did not give Indians their individual allotments in a way that those Indians could use them if they even wanted to use them. So they didn't give them 100 acres of prime farmland. They gave them 20 acres of timberland over here, and they gave them 20 acres of farmland 50 miles away, and they gave them 20 acres of riverfront 50 miles from there. And no one in those days could cover that kind of ground.
For instance, at Blackfeet, they would parcel a little piece up in the mountains, and then 90 miles away, they would have another parcel. Well, there was no resources for people to buy plows or whatever they needed to develop that land. And so you ended up with people that were totally disconnected to their property.
So in effect, the government said, well, you can't use your land because it's all so splintered, so we will manage it for you. Allow us to manage it for you, and whoever we rent that land out to, we will pay you the revenues from those leases and rents.
The government basically said that all Indians were dumb and they would not be able to manage these lands by themselves. And so they had to step in and they had to manage these lands. It was a forced trustee relationship, and that's the way it exists today.
The lawsuit is, in effect, the fact that the government has not paid the Indians over the years for all of these lands on which a huge amount of our mineral and oil and agricultural and grazing and mining wealth of this country is based, including all of the oil fields of Oklahoma.
I began listening to stories from my parents, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, always saying, we can't get our money from the Indian agent. And I always thought about that, you know, why can't people get their money? And they would say, we saw a farmer that had a truckload of grain that took it off of my field, but I don't get any money.
I met with a Blackfeet up there in Montana. His name is James Mad Dog Kennerly. And by your and my estimates, he should be a prosperous man. His allotment has as many as 5 working oil wells on it. He receives roughly $30 a month for this. And he lives in a house that's the size of a modern walk-in closet. So clearly here is a man who has not been given his due. And he's just one example of the kinds of things that I saw and heard over and over and over again when I was in Montana.
And, you know, when I was growing up, I always felt that my parents owning land was a liability because they couldn't take it to the bank and leverage that land because the government would say, oh, you can't mortgage trust property, you can't do this, you can't do that. And so people just felt like they had no opportunities. Like in the outside world, if you owned 5 or 6 oil wells pumping on your land or you had all kinds of agricultural land, you know, they were wealthy.
The time that I spent in the Blackfeet Nation, it was very clear to me that if these people had the monies that are due to them, they would be prosperous Americans. Surrounding the Blackfeet Nation are prosperous farms and cattle ranches and mining interests, many of which are actually owned by these Blackfeet and leased out to the other people who are working those lands. Why the Blackfeet themselves are not getting the monies on those lands and why they haven't had them for 118 years is still a mystery.
People have to understand how the government has viewed Native American people from the very beginning of time. You know, basically they would like to get rid of them. And I think that was one of their entire intentions, is that if they could take more and more land away from individual Indian people, then there's going to be less and less people that will become Indian, and they wanted to eliminate a race. I really feel that that was the entire purpose, you know, but they didn't, and I think that they didn't bank on the fact that people would challenge them and people would fight and stand up for their rights. And I think that, you know, people for a number of years, you know, Crazy Horse, everybody has been trying to fight up. My own grandfather, Mountain Chief, who was the last one ever to concede under Calvary rule, and, you know, they knew what would happen. And so I think that we will always have to defend who we are in the United States. I don't think that the United States government has ever brought Native American people to a level where they feel that they're equal, and we always have to fight. I mean, it's sad to say, but we do. We have to fight for our rights, and you know, all you have to do is going into an Indian community, and you can see the effects of the mismanagement by the Department of Interior and Department of Treasury.
Eloise Cabell was trained as an accountant initially and later a banker, and she realized that what the government was doing to Indians bore no sense of fair accounting or banking practices. It was completely a bizarre system they'd come up with based on just their own word, and that isn't good enough, obviously, in matters of money. And this is where she began to challenge them.
I was an accountant when I was the treasurer for the Blackfeet tribe. And tribal trusts are managed by the Department of Interior along with individual Indians. And as I began working for the tribe, statements were coming in from the Department of Interior that I couldn't understand. We would have money coming out of that account, and I knew that I was the only one that should be able to draw money from those particular accounts, but there was money coming out. There was huge problems with interest instead of accruing positive interest. We were accruing deficit interest, and, you know, that might be okay if you could invest in the stock market, but that was prohibited by law. All the monies had to be invested in guaranteed securities. So I knew there was huge issues, and then I began writing letters. I began asking questions, and it would all come back to basically what the people were saying years ago. They couldn't get any answers. And the answer that I would get is I was not smart enough to read account statements. And, of course, that just made me a little bit angrier, the fact that, you know, people were accusing me of not being smart enough to read statements when I knew they were wrong.
Eloise Cabell, she's a recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant. Her challenges were initially approaching people in Congress and trying to get laws changed, and nothing ever happened. And after years of that, she gave up and finally filed a lawsuit.
The United States government, since the inception of the Allotment Act, they have never accounted to individual Indians on what kind of land they own, you know, what's on that land or what's underneath that land. And so I always use the analogy that if you walked into a bank and said, "Can I see how much money I have in my bank account?" And they come back and said, "No, we can't give that to you." And they said, "Well, can I have an account statement?" "No, we can't give that to you because we don't have that information." You know, it's just basically the same thing. And they're not providing information to individual Indians on what they own and what they're owed. And as a result, it just has created a horrible mess. And the most frustrating part about it right now is instead of the Department of Interior and Department of Treasury standing up and say, "We know we have created this horrible, horrible mess, and we've got to figure out how to fix it," they're spending all the resources that they can find to fight us on trying to get individual Indian beneficiaries, who they are the trustee for, information and accounting on their accounts.
Have you ever been cheated? Email us at www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. Or call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. You're listening to Voices of Our World.